It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Thousands of Wisconsin residents are set to be kicked off of the state's food assistance program because of changes from the federal government set to take effect 1 week from now on July 1st.
Provisions from President Trump's tax and spending law called the One Big Beautiful Bill Act will bar food stamps for refugees, asylum seekers, and people admitted to the country for humanitarian reasons. Undocumented immigrants have never been eligible for SNAP benefits.
Milwaukee's Hunger Task Force estimates this change will affect over 7,000 people across Wisconsin, with more than half of them in Milwaukee County.
For more on what's changing and what this means for thousands of people statewide, we have Yi Leng Zhong, executive director of the WASA nonprofit New Beginnings for Refugees. Yi Leng, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you for having me here.
Can you walk us through specifically, who will be losing eligibility as a result of this federal change?
Yeah, first and foremost, just once again, thank you for all having me here. So this is a very, very important situation that is currently happening, specifically in the WASA area here. We know that approximately about a little bit over 200 individuals that are refugee status or asylum seekers that will be impacted. Basically, it's individuals that are considered not to have their green card or the permanent residence. And, you know, the part that's really concerning is the fact that these are refugees that have gone through years of vetting, an intensive process. So they are here, quote unquote, documented because they've come through a certain process. You've been vetted, had the background check, paid their tickets to be able to be here. And we're expecting about 200 of them to be impacted in the central Wisconsin, specifically in the Marathon County area.
What kind of background do these refugees and asylum seekers come from before they end up in Wisconsin and in your community, in WASA in particular?
Yeah, we have neighbors that are from various countries across the world here, obviously. And some of them are from war-torn areas such as the Democratic Republic of Congo or Afghanistan, Ukraine. So these are individuals that are not able to return back to their homes as a result of war or, you know, conflicts that have raged on in their areas. And these are individuals that have spent years in refugee camps and then went on through an intensive vetting process through the United States government in order for them to be here, and they've been cleared, but now they are all being impacted, and this is putting a heavy strain on our local food pantries and organizations to ensure that they have the proper food for them to be able to survive.
So Yi Leng, how often are you seeing local refugees and asylum seekers relying on state food assistance programs? How big of an impact could this have?
Yeah, the effect and the negative effect, actually, I should say, is going to be huge. And the reason why I say that is because these are individuals that are eager to get in, to experience the American dream, and they're out there working, they're out there going through ELL classes, etc. But they need a little help, right? They need a little help to be able to continue moving forward, to be able to hand up. And we're expecting, as I said a little bit earlier, over 200 individuals to be impacted. Now they rely on these SNAP benefits, and with the risk of them losing this, it's going to be a nightmare. I'm just going to use it to describe that way there, because now they're going to rely heavily on the local available pantries, which won't meet their daily use, right? There's families that they need to serve, and this is just another concern that we're experiencing. And what we're hoping for is a immediate resolution and to be able to provide services, provide food for these families, because they are human beings. They're here. They've gone through a very extensive process, and we need to make sure that they have the services they need as well.
The Secretary of Agriculture, Brooke Rollins, has said these eligibility changes were meant to reduce fraud and waste in the program. Do you see these changes working toward that stated goal?
For me personally, I don't think so. You know, I think the individuals that are being impacted specifically are the individuals that has gone through the process, has been vetted, who left their country and cannot return back to the country. And they're here trying to experience the American dream, trying to, restart their lives. And now they're, in a sense, here being left out to dry. And we talk about how we want our neighbors here to become sustainable, but we keep putting roadblocks in front of them and making it harder and harder for them to experience experience that American dream and be sustainable. And we need change. We need change more than ever to ensure that these, our neighbors, are given the same resources so that they can succeed.
Yi Ling, thank you for joining us and sharing the situation.
Thank you.
Yi Ling Zhong is Executive Director of New Beginnings for Refugees. It's based in Wausau. He was with us to discuss the impacts of the Trump administration barring refugees and asylum seekers from receiving state food assistance programs. Now we're turning our attention to the food banks in the state that are bracing for a greater demand when the change goes into effect July 1st. Matt Steenstra directs advocacy and community engagement for Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin. Matt, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
What kind of increase in demand are you anticipating once this federal change takes effect next week?
We anticipate that more families are going to be looking out for their local food pantry in order to get the food that they want to make meals to put on the table. It's going to be a rolling change. So as refugees come up for their renewal date that had SNAP or food share benefits, those are the families that will drop off the program. And we want to make sure that our food pantry system is prepared as they can be. We've been communicating with them since February about these upcoming changes, but no amount of preparation can help food pantries replace the grocery store. That was never meant to be the case.
Okay, your network has been preparing months for this change. What kind of resource capacity do you and other food pantries have to provide for additional residents who are losing access to state food assistance programs?
As a food bank, we help make sure that our food pantries have the food that they need to be able to serve their families. So we have opportunities to be able to source specific food items that will help food pantries connect their neighbors to the meals and the types of food that they want. But here's the thing, nothing can replace the grocery store. The food pantry system in the state of Wisconsin, especially Milwaukee County, is already extremely strained. We have seen record demand for the past few years and especially over the course of the past year. So as more people start looking for their local food pantry to be able to put food on the table, that's not a sustainable solution.
Can food pantries fill that void alone, or do you think it will require multiple social service agencies to collectively meet this need?
I am constantly in awe of the work of the agencies that work with refugees, building trust and helping make sure that families understand how to speak English, how to use the local bus, and how to get connected to resources. No, the food pantry system was not designed to help replace these benefits. SNAP benefits, when you think about it's a supplemental nutrition assistance program, and you want to make sure that the people that need it most are accessing it. These are the folks that need it most, and we want to make sure that they have access to nutrition resources. The strongest nutrition program in the country is not going to be available to these families.
I want to turn our attention to work requirements for a moment. The One Big Beautiful Bill Act also expanded the number of benefit recipients who must meet work requirements to qualify for the program. What questions, what impacts are you seeing as a result of changes to work requirements?
What we're seeing right now is still a lot of confusion. A lot of families aren't sure if the work requirement is going to impact them or not. I think here's the thing to be clear, is that the state of Wisconsin Department of Health Services, which runs the SNAP program in the state of Wisconsin, gets information out to every single individual that is impacted. And if you have any question, you can go to accesswi.gov and check up your own status. Because as misinformation spreads and people are unsure about all the changes that are happening, whether it's eligibility with refugees, whether or not you have to meet a work requirement, it is just so important to just stop, pause, check the source for yourself and see if you're going to be impacted. But that's what we're seeing right now, a lot of fear and confusion, and that absolutely drives up food pantry attendance.
I wonder, too, if it is more confusing and there is more issues when it involves newcomers to the country, asylum seekers and refugees in trying to, understand the changes to the system.
Absolutely, it does. And those are some of the families that we're also going to be really focused on, is how to make sure that we can work with local charities and nonprofits and try and support those new families coming to the country that don't have access to SNAP and are trying to adjust to brand new world around them. How do we make sure that all those new families that will never even have a chance to apply for the SNAP program, that they have access not just to food, because it's not just food. When you're coming from a different country and a different culture and you've experienced so much trauma, how do we make sure that you get the food that you're familiar with, that your kids want to eat? That's going to be very important to us.
We've been talking about this July 1 cutoff, but can you explain how this is a 12-month cycle here of people losing benefits, that it's not one fell swoop on July 1st?
Yes. It is not a light switch that turns off on July 1st. What it is that as families come in and they apply for and they receive SNAP, that is different months throughout the year. And upon their renewal date, a screening process will happen. They'll be identified as one of the impacted individuals, and then they will not be eligible for a renewal of those benefits. So it's not going to all happen on July 1st, but throughout the year, families will find out if they're impacted. And all of those families have been receiving letters and communication from Department of Health Services.
And these food share eligibility changes, they come as food pantry demand. Your organization has increased 30% alone from 2023 to 2025. As we close here, what level of demand are you facing for help from your food pantry now?
Over the course of the past year, or if you look at 2025, the number of people at our food pantries increased by about 80,000 people. We are seeing thousands and thousands of more families utilize food pantries than ever before. And it's a lot of families that are scared of what's happening to SNAP. It's also a lot of families that have incomes too high to qualify for food share SNAP, but too low to be able to afford to shop for groceries in their local grocery store. Mm-hmm. So our food pantry system is already experiencing extreme strain, and we want to make sure that there's enough food for families that are coming to get service.
Matt, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Matt Steenstra, Director of Advocacy and Community Engagement for Feeding America, Eastern Wisconsin, with us to share how his organization is bracing for thousands of residents who will be ineligible for state food assistance programs beginning July 1st. Earlier, we heard from Yiling Zhong, the Executive Director of New Beginnings for Refugees. It's based in Wausau.
Coming up, Wisconsin has seen a jump in the number of defendants in criminal cases who need evaluations to see if they're competent to stand trial. A Milwaukee judge tells us what's at stake.
If we don't have a high degree of confidence that a defendant is competent, we can't have any confidence in anything that goes on in the case.
That's next here on Wisconsin Today. It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Coming up, we talk about a rise in court-ordered competency evaluations here in Wisconsin.
First, today is Wisconsin Public Radio's June One Day Member Drive. Michelle Good joins us here in the studio. Your support is so important. It powers the news, conversations, and entertainment you count on. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Rob. And because that's how WPR works, the people who use it are the largest source of funding for it.
And now is an exciting time to give. You'll help us raise an entire member drive's worth of donations in just one day. So give now. Make this one-day drive a success at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And today, your support will go twice as far. A generous group of donors will match all donations up to $75,000.
It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting the WPR programs that inform and inspire you and the entire state of Wisconsin.
And your participation right now is vital. Join in to meet this match before the end of the day. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In our last conversation, we heard how changes at the federal level to food assistance programs will affect people living here in Wisconsin. That's what we do a lot on the show, look at things going on in the nation as a whole, the federal government, the world, and saying, hey, what does that mean here in the state? WPR is listener supported. That means that when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you make this hour and many more hours possible. Choose an amount that works for you. Take a few minutes. Do it today because it's just a one-day drive and make your gift.
And plus, on this one day, you get your donation doubled. Whether you've given before or you're making your first ever donation, sign up for ongoing monthly gifts.
Choose the amount that works for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Takes just a few minutes. Once it's set up, your support for the programs you value is always going to be current.
Now, maybe you've only just recently discovered Wisconsin Public Radio. We want you to know that WPR is listener-driven, not profit-driven. You get more programming per hour because we don't have to take the time out for long blocks of commercials.
Our goal, our business, is to inform and to entertain you and serve up quality programs for you to enjoy. WPR is your station, and it's all possible because listeners like you give what they can to support it. Show your support right now. Get it doubled on this one-day drive at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I've listened all over the country, you know, traveling. You try to find the public stations. What we have here is so wonderful, and I don't think a lot of people realize it. And it is, for many people, I think it's... they can't get out, but they can find out what's going on by turning on the radio. I'm John Ink from Wausau, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for education and information. It comes to you. You don't have to go hunt it down.
Show your support for that source of news and information at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It's Wisconsin Today. Michelle Good is in the studio with us. Your support during this June one-day member drive makes all the news and information and inspiration you enjoy on WPR possible. Your gift of $5 or $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, is the right amount to give.
And if you've never given to WPR before, here's what you can expect. It's really a very, very short process. It takes just a few minutes. You answer some basic questions like your name and address, the amount you'd like to make of your gift, and how you'd like to pay for it.
And that's it. Make that first ever donation to WPR. You'll feel great about it because listener support is such a big part of what makes WPR happen. A lot of first-time donors will give $10 a month or $120. The amount is totally up to you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your gift of $10 or $20 a month, it makes intelligent radio available to the entire state of Wisconsin, even beyond. That way you can see how powerful your gift really is.
And that big impact is accomplished in just a couple few minutes. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You choose the amount.
Don't forget, we have that $75,000 dollar-for-dollar match. It is in effect. And the thing is, to make this drive successful, everyone needs to join in. So please give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and your support of Wisconsin Public Radio will go twice as far.
And for just $22 a month, you can ask for your WPR picnic blanket.
It's support picnic season.
It is. Support the WPR programs you value. Show your appreciation for WPR and enjoy the great outdoors. I took this for a spin yesterday with a little photo shoot with the blanket. Nice blanket. It's got like kind of a waterproof lining that'll go on the bottom.
Oh, very
nice. So your butt doesn't get wet, hopefully. I mean, unless it's really raining like it was this morning. It's a great blanket and it's a great radio service. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you are not a sustainer, become one right now. It's easy to set up. You just make ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or credit card. You have total flexibility over it. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You count on us for great conversations each and every day. We count on you to help pay for it. Make your important gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you.
Wisconsin's circuit courts are facing increased demand for court-ordered competency evaluations. That's a mental health screening that determines whether a defendant understands the proceedings well enough to participate in their own defense.
Investigative reporting by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel has found that the number of such evaluations has roughly doubled in the state since 2013. The number of defendants found to be unfit for trial has nearly tripled.
Those defendants are often referred for competency treatment, which can take a long time to set up while they wait in jail.
Eva Wen is an investigative data reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Eva, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you for having me.
Looking at your reporting on this, it looks like quite a jump. How significant is this increase in these competency evaluations when you look at the numbers for Wisconsin and for Milwaukee County?
So I looked at just the statewide numbers, and for competency evaluations, which is when someone's competency is in doubt, that number has jumped from 1,200 in 2013 to 2,500 in 2025. But then there's also the treatment orders, which is after the evaluations, when someone's found not competent and ordered for treatment, that number has tripled from 300 to 900.
And a big part of your story is that, hey, if I am referred to this treatment to get me competent enough to stand trial, that's not going to happen tomorrow. What kind of things are we seeing when it comes to turnaround time and availability of this kind of treatment?
Yeah, so sometimes people are having to wait weeks or months in jail sometimes for a treatment bed to become available. And sometimes because of that, and because jail is not necessarily, you know, a very therapeutic environment for someone to get better, sometimes they actually get worse or continue to live in difficult situations psychologically and also physically.
Do we have a sense of what kind of charges people are facing? Are these low-level offenses, serious felonies? Do we know who is in this position?
It's a bit of everybody. I don't have the very specific numbers of how many people face misdemeanors or how many people face felony charges, but from just people saying anecdotally, it's a lot of people facing misdemeanor charges such as disorderly conduct and things like that, although there are also felony charges, like sometimes homicide.
You talked to various stakeholders in the system here, Eva. What did people say was driving this increase in the number of people being found not competent to stand trial and being referred to these kind of services?
Yeah, so a lot of people who are in the state health department and people who are in the criminal justice system are saying it's a lack of community resources that's driving people to be criminalized for acting in a mental health crisis. But I also spoke to a public defender, and the public defender said it's also because people in mental health crises are being charged criminally more than they were before.
And what kind of solutions and fixes did people suggest when you asked them about this?
So it's a range of different things. So the Milwaukee County Courthouse has started this mental health docket, which Judge Mark Sanders is overseeing that right now, where they deal with, you know, just overlook all the competency, or not all the competency, a lot of the competency cases. And in terms of the state health department, you know, they are opening up more beds at other facilities recently. And also they're looking to use outpatient competency restoration, so they don't need to necessarily use a bed, or they're also doing jail-based competency restoration where someone is treated in jail when they wait for a bed to open up.
And Eva, as we wrap up, what are the big unanswered questions for you? What are you watching for next on this?
That's a good question. So I'm definitely looking more into the community resources or lack thereof. That's a big thing. And as we face a lot of federal funding cuts and Milwaukee County's funding cuts, that will also be a big question there, what services will be affected and how we will see that trickle down to the criminal system.
Eva, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Eva Wen, investigative data reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Been talking about the number of criminal defendants found unfit for trial after competency evaluations nearly tripling since 2013. The number of evaluations nearly doubling over that same time. Now we take a look at how this increased need for evaluations is affecting the criminal justice system and those who work in it. Mark Sanders is a Milwaukee County Circuit Court judge. Judge Sanders, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, you're welcome, Rob. I'm glad to be here.
Before we dig into the specific problems and possible solutions here, I want to talk about the foundational element. Why do we pay attention to whether someone is competent, as we legally define it, to stand trial? Why is this an important issue?
Well, competence really is the most foundational thing in any criminal case. If we don't have a high degree of confidence that a defendant is competent, we can't have any confidence in anything that goes on in the case. We don't know if a defendant wants to plead guilty, for example. If we're not sure that they're competent, we don't know whether their desire to plead guilty is because that's what they want to do or because they have a misunderstanding about what the case involves or about defenses they might have or really anything in connection with the case. We also don't have confidence in the effectiveness of a case in the criminal system. We don't just prosecute people and have cases just to prosecute people. The goal is to ultimately reduce crime and reduce crime victims. And if people that are being prosecuted don't understand that they've got a case pending or don't understand the substance of the case, it's hard to have confidence that the goals of the system are ever going to be reached.
Your assignment is involving the felony mental health docket in large part. Why does Milwaukee County's court system need this kind of specialized docket for these cases?
Well, we started this docket about 2 years ago, and it involves really three different components. The largest component is competency, and it's really the competency cases from all of the criminal courts, with the exception of homicide and sexual assault cases. Those are heard by the judges that preside over those cases. The goal is that to concentrate all of these cases in one spot so that systemic issues can be more easily addressed, so that we can free up some space in the other courts, and so that hopefully we can also concentrate knowledge, both in the lawyers that are in here regularly and in the judge that presides over the calendar, so that we've got a better, a more detailed understanding of how competency works and the details of the statute and really how things need to move forward in the legal system.
We heard from Eva and her reporting seeing this big jump in people being found unfit for trial and being referred for this kind of treatment. She offered some of the explanations she heard for that jump. From your vantage point, why are we seeing this increase?
You know, it's really hard to tell. Eva did some really good reporting on this, and I accept the explanations that she's discovered in her reporting, that there's been both an increase in the awareness of mental health issues, that there's a greater need for community resources, that sometimes, unfortunately, it seems that the criminal justice system is the easiest way to get people involved in the mental health system. So people may find themselves getting charged when hopefully they would find some other avenue so their mental health issues could be addressed.
On a really practical level, who flags this? Is it a defense attorney? Is it a defendant themselves or someone in the court system who says, hey, we have concerns about the competency of this person before we move into the trial?
The issue can be raised by anybody, but it's most commonly raised by the defense attorney who, in their engagement with their client, will discover that maybe they don't understand fully what they're charged with, or maybe they're not really able to assist in their own defense. And so they'll raise the issue with the court if they have concerns about those things. Then we order an evaluation and the process moves down that direction.
Eva mentioned that the person then waiting for this competency treatment is in many cases waiting in jail. Why is that?
Well, there's all sorts of reasons that a person could find themselves awaiting treatment in custody. Mm-hmm. Frequently, on the more serious felonies, they may have significant cash bail that they're unable to post, and so they would be in custody, even apart from there being a competency evaluation. Some of the times, people need the resources of a hospital and would not be able to be restored through outpatient competency restoration. Some of the time, there may be multiple cases going on, or somebody might be being held by the Department of Corrections, and so that has them in custody. So there's really a variety of reasons why people could find themselves in custody waiting for a bed at a hospital to be restored to competence, rather than being able to use the outpatient competency restoration services.
Judge Sanders, I hear a couple mental health opportunities here, I guess. If someone in this case had mental health treatment options before they had an encounter with law enforcement. Well, they might not be here in the first place. And now they're in this situation. We have questions about their competence. We need more mental health treatment for them to get through that stage. Where do you see the best investment in mental health treatment that helps us keep people out of the situation where they're in jail waiting competency treatment?
Well, there's really two areas that I think are ripe for to work on that issue. And one would be increasing the number of beds that are available at state institutions for competency restoration. I know the Department of Health Services is working on that, and hopefully that will provide some relief to those people that are on the wait list. The other resource that I think would be valuable is improving the level of mental health resources at the community level, so that people could access treatment and hopefully never find themselves in the criminal justice system to begin with. We're trying to use the outpatient competency restoration program as much as we reasonably can, and that's another area where we could enhance the resources that are available for restoring people to competence. But I think on the whole, it's really increased bed space and increased community resources where we could use the resources the most.
Judge Sanders, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Mark Sanders is a Milwaukee County Circuit Court judge. We've been talking about an increase in competency evaluations for defendants, with a number of defendants found unfit for trial nearly tripling in Wisconsin since 2013. We also heard from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter Eva Wen, who has been following this subject.
Coming up, Wisconsin makes beer and cheese and tofu, too. Meet the new co-owner of a long-running Milwaukee tofu business and find out why he tackled the challenge.
So it came from wanting to do it. It came from, like, admiring so much this company that made something that no one else makes anywhere close by, really.
That's next on WPR News.
It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Verrett.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin is known for producing beer and cheese, but there is also a longtime Wisconsin producer of tofu.
After roughly 40 years of supplying local organic tofu and tempeh to Wisconsin, Simple Soyman, the Milwaukee-based manufacturer, has a new owner after the original owners retired.
The company reopened this spring, and it's the only known organic manufacturer of tofu in the state. And at its peak, it delivered 2 tons of the soy-based food weekly to Wisconsin businesses.
Jim Neumeyer, a longtime vegetarian and former co-owner of Beans and Barley Cafe in Milwaukee, is taking the helm along with his wife, Olive Crane. He joins us now. Jim, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate being on.
Now, you've become part of the Simple Soyman history, and we'll get into that. But can you tell us a little bit about its origins and its kind of bringing tofu production into Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely tell you that the first beginnings really started here in Madison with the Bountiful Bean. And it's Simple Soyman and Bountiful Bean's connection is through, you know, RJ and Barbara Gruenwald, who own Simple Soyman for like 35 years. Mm-hmm. And they were in close contact and worked with Bountiful Bean for years and years and years, which I hear you also did in a capacity. So they wound up taking control of Bountiful Bean at one point and kind of moving into Milwaukee and taking Bountiful Bean and growing it into Simple Soyman. And then 35 years passed. It's like wild, you know?
And now you were familiar with the product and you were a co-owner of Beans and Barley in Milwaukee, a very popular place in town there. What made you transition to manufacturing tofu and taking over this business that had a close following in the state?
Yeah, like, well, I worked at the restaurant for 26 years. I started as a dishwasher and made my way through all the different parts of doing the business. And the whole time the staple was Simple Soyman. Like, if anything, we were getting like, it's like super like took it for granted that there was like an amazing tofu company like in our town, mm-hmm. and lifelong vegetarian was eating it all the time, cooking it all the time. And, you know, Barb and RJ had started talking about like wanting to slow down and get out of tofu making. And I was like, oh my gosh, we can't, like, we need to make something in Milwaukee, you know, like let's like manufacture this. I was like, I really am so interested in trying to do this. And they were, even to their credit, kind of like, this is like really, really, really hard. You know, like, this isn't like not like a restaurant's easy or anything at all, mm-hmm. but they were like, it is like crazy hard work. And we kept talking, and it took a while, but like, you know, I was transitioning to where a restaurant, maybe it was time for it to like either change a lot or shut down, you know, and like, we kind of thought of like, well, can we do both? And then now I know that would have been really insane. But, you know, we were able to find a way to kind of like kind of smoothly moved into doing it. So it came from wanting to do it. It came from like admiring so much this company that made something that no one else makes anywhere close by, really. I mean, there's some people in Chicago and Minnesota, but they were like pioneers, you know, of a...
And I think that surprises people because you might think Wisconsin, yeah, beer and cheese and frozen pizza and tofu, yeah, maybe we import that from California or something. It's really notable that this is happening here in the Midwest, here in Wisconsin, right?
Yeah, and it's totally the part of me that's the hippie part is like so stoked on the fact that for decades they worked with Jaworski Farms in Oncana County, Wisconsin, and there's a farmer that grows these beans that they're called Ventons, and they like love being here. This beautiful organic crop loves being here, and we have luckily in our area tons of water, and yeah, the Niagara, you know, natural clean sea salt has to come from afar, but other than that, we're just making this from this thing that just gets trucked kind of down the road. And there are other organic purveyors of soybeans that are regionally local, you know, like our state, Iowa and Minnesota, you know.
Now, people might know if they're familiar with tofu, it starts as soybeans and ends up as a block of tofu. You are getting a very intimate familiarity with what happens in between those two parts. What are the key things for turning those beans into that tofu?
Yeah, for sure. The beans come to us on a pallet by the ton. Bag gets soaked. Once it's soaked long enough, we take it and we grind it down into our way of doing it is into a big cauldron, like a 60-gallon cauldron. And we have three of those. So it gets ground down. The slurry, it's called, kind of boils for a while. Or, you know, we start to warm it up. And then we pump it into the second cauldron that kind of warms it up again. And while you do that, you've got to start the first cauldron again. Then you pump the second one into the third, the first into the second, and then you grind again. And by the time it gets to the third, we boil it up twice. So now it's like a very safe thing. It's boiled up. The beans are tender, and it goes through like a giant juicer, basically, like a giant extractor that's like cone that spins super fast. What falls out is called okara, and that's like the leftovers. And what goes that we use is the soy milk. Now, the soy milk is very beany and kind of yummy to drink, but what we do with it then is we add nigari, which is a like super clean sea salt into it. And that, just like cheese making, starts at curding. You take the curds, you pull off the whey, you put the curds into like a pressing box inside of like cheesecloth, and it gets smooshed down pneumatically. We do luckily have machines that we can use, even though our process is very traditional. From there, it gets put into an ice bath tank to cool it off, and then gets cut and put into buckets that we reuse and ask for back from restaurants, or it goes into our packaging, which goes off to our awesome stores, you know.
We're talking to Jim Neumeyer, new co-owner of Simple Soy Man, a Milwaukee-based manufacturer of tofu and tempeh. I want to talk about who's eating this stuff. I think people might think, all right, this is for vegetarians, but hang on, I'm not a vegetarian, but tofu and tempeh are in my mix. Am I a weirdo, or are there a lot of people who are kind of going back and forth?
You are totally not a weirdo. In this case, I mean, you're a weirdo in all the awesome ways, but like, you know, no. Like, tons and tons of families are incorporating, and individuals are incorporating tofu into their rotation of proteins. It's like really healthy for you. It's certainly in our area is readily available. You know, it's also got a great way of taking in like almost any flavor you'd like it to have. You know, it's a really great, it doesn't need to be the main event. It loves to be the supporting cast of flavor, you know, when you're cooking. So yeah, I would say definitely nowadays, many, many, many people are incorporating it. It's not just for, you're like, hippie buddy or whatever anymore, you know?
Once upon a time, I didn't know what to do with tofu, and I got silken tofu, and it melted in the stir fry I was trying to make. So I've learned if you're cooking, if you're marinating, if you want cubes to stay cubes, you want firm or extra firm. For people who have managed that step, what you've got a recipe to suggest to us, just a marinated baked tofu is an easy way to start. What happens there?
Totally. So the one that we hope to make and that I've made many times at the restaurant is just a balsamic marinated one. So it's really, sharing this one's great because it's really simple recipes that all, like, are almost all the ingredients are at your house already. Balsamic vinegar, some olive oil, a little bit of like, you know, minced crushed garlic is good. Just a little bit of salt if you need it. So what you do is just take those items, whip them together. You let your marinade or tofu marinade there for, you know, as a minimum of 3 hours, I'd say. But if you like it packed full of flavor, let it go all night. Once that's done and it's been imparted with the flavor, you'll want to just bake it probably 20 minutes aside in 350 degree oven. And then after that, you can literally do anything you want with it. And that flavor really works with like any type of dish. The one thing you should do if you're going to marinate, though, that I did forget to say, was that you should press out the water if you can. Press it. You don't have to have a fancy anything to do it. Just wrap it maybe in some paper towel or a cloth that you have that's clean, and put a book on top of it, something heavy, and just let it get some water out so it has room to suck in the marinade that you choose. You know, one thing you can do too is just grab a spice packet of something that you like and put some oil and maybe a little bit of water, and that will work too, you know.
Now, for the production here, Simple Soy Man, as I understand it, had stopped production when the previous owners retired. You're more or less, you're bringing it back up. So what are your steps in spinning things back up and distributing again?
Yeah, like, so the first steps were like, we kind of like had to acquaint ourselves with the equipment. We had to get a lot of training. Luckily, we had Barb and RJ and Eric and Ananda and Andrew all there to kind of, very luckily, hold us up as we went through the steps of like, well, what, we have to get these 10 tons of tofu beans, you know, like we have to get the machinery up and running again. We have to like think of a production schedule. We have to reach out and find who used to enjoy the stuff and hope that they still want it and ask them if they want it, you know. That was a huge part. We got the facility kind of like, you know, when Barb and RJ had the soyman, they could never stop to like do stuff. So
time to make the tofu.
Yeah, exactly. Always time to make the tofu. So like we took that opportunity of having a stoppage to kind of like get a new floor, get a ceiling, you know, like just do the things that you have. And we kind of felt like, well, we're not going to like, once we start going, we got to go, you know? So we did that. So kind of all those things, we've been lucky to have the support of those people, you know, and of course our friends and family. Very much so. And obviously the stores and restaurants that have like come back and everyone that's been really stoked on getting this tofu back. It's been like really, it has warmed our hearts and we're like so grateful, you know.
It's a good place to leave it. Jim, thanks again for coming over here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Jim Neumeyer is co-owner of Simple Soy Man, a tofu and tempeh manufacturing company based in Milwaukee.
Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio June One Day Member Drive. Michelle Good is here with me in the studio, and today is the only day we'll be on air asking for your support.
And while that means more Wisconsin Today for you, it also means that we need to raise an entire drive's worth of donations in just one day. So your gift now is really important. Donate, please, at WPR.org. or 888-202-2552.
Like every nonprofit, WPR has a budget year. A new budget year begins for us on July 1st, and that's why your gift today is so important. It gets us ready to carry out our mission of service to you and your community today and for years to come. Thank you so much for your gift of any amount right now at WPR.org or 888 888- 202-2552.
Every day here on Wisconsin Today, you hear about news, information, inspiration that affects the entire state of Wisconsin, and a wide variety of it, too. Today, we learned about the changes in SNAP eligibility and how that would affect not just the people who are eligible and or not eligible now, but also the food banks around the state, competency evaluations for people going through the criminal justice system, and the burgeoning tofu industry.
Tofu.
Who knew? Right here. This is what you expect from Wisconsin Today, and something that you wouldn't get anywhere else in the state. That's because WPR is listener supported. And that means when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you make this hour and all of the hours that you hear her on the station possible. So choose an amount that works for you. Take a few minutes and make that gift.
If you ask a WPR member why they give, they'll probably tell you it just feels better to listen to WPR when you do give. It feels good to know that you're part of making something special happen.
So make that first ever gift of, say, $10 or $20 a month and enjoy the excitement of supporting your Wisconsin Public Radio. Plus, when you make that donation, we have this $75,000 dollar for dollar match.
Yeah.
So it will go twice as far in helping us and twice as far in providing you the information, the entertainment that you love. It all starts with your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And when you think about it, listening to WPR is like a tuition-free lifelong education. All you need is the radio, the computer, your mobile device to listen.
It's very true. It's very much for people who are curious, who want to know about the world around them, and it's your support that makes this lifelong learning available to you and hundreds of thousands of other people like you, too. That is amazing. You have the power to share information and learning with a huge community of people. You're passing it on. You're paying it forward when you support WPR at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Enjoy the great outdoors and show your support for WPR this summer. Ask for the new WPR picnic blanket with your donation of $22 a month.
The picnic blanket is really nice.
Ooh, yeah. It is soft and comfy and it's waterproof.
I think you'll feel classy if you use this for your picnic.
Folds up.
And it's got a handle on it.
I would take this to the park.
Your kid's soccer game. This is ideal.
You can pull it out, stay dry and warm as you sit on the ground or a bench.
Use your blanket and show your support for WPR. Give now. Here's how.
Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to make your donation this June one-day member drive. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. I'm here with Michelle Good. Join in with your gift now because WPR's essential service is available to you and your community thanks to your support.
And join now because you have an opportunity for an amazing picnic blanket. And also we have that dollar for dollar match. Plus, this is the only day of this pledge drive. So let's make a success. Let's make it a success. And sometimes, you know, you get more than you actually pay for. WPR is a place where that is true every single day. I mean, you've had examples. It's 10 o'clock. We've already heard multiple topics that relate to you and our state. So consider a gift of $2 a day to support the radio programs that you love.
And today is the best day to double your impact. Join in now. Get in on the $75,000 dollar-for-dollar match. Your gift goes twice as far. Give now while you're thinking about it at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 and your support at WPR will go twice as far. Thank you so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Wisconsin Today producers include Lauren Cox and Royce Padeswa.
Our technical directors are Tyler Ditter and Brad Kohlberg.
Learn more about us at wpr.org/Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to WPR News.